I didn't even think about the money when we set up that business. I actually wasn't really motivated by the money in that type of business. I actually genuinely wanted to help people. Like as I said, so many of my friends had struggled with fertility, and I just felt that I could actually solve a problem.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Philip McGlade, the CEO of Therapy Clinic, Therapy Fertility and Optilase. This is a masterclass in how to scale your business. Digitalization. What exactly is it and how can it transform your business? Well, the local enterprise office have you covered. Digitalization is incorporating digital tools into your business to improve efficiency and productivity, saving you time, money, and energy. It could be anything from stock control to an online payments or booking system. And now there's a grant for it all. The Grow Digital Voucher helps businesses go digital and pay for those improvements that will make a big difference to the way your business operates. And the best thing about it all, the local enterprise office can handle it all for you. Any business from any sector with up to 50 employees can apply for the Digital for Business audit. And from there, they will give you a bespoke digital roadmap for your business. Once that's sorted, you can apply for the Grow Digital Voucher to help pay for those changes. Simple as that. So, if you want to make those first digital steps with your business to help save you time, money, and energy, talk to your local enterprise office today or go to localenterpriseoffice.ie/digital to find out more or click the link in the description below. Now, on with today's episode.
Philip, welcome to the pod. Pleasure to have you joining me.
Yeah, no, I'm delighted to be here.
We already had a good warm-up chat, so I think
certainly did.
Going to be a good one.
I hope so.
What do you do?
What do I do? Good question. I'm still trying to figure that out. So I'm the CEO of the Therapy Group. So the Therapy Group consists of Therapy Clinic, which is our kind of aesthetic chain. We also have Therapy Fertility and we have Optilase.
Okay. I think everyone's going to be familiar with those brands.
Hope so.
Well, it's one of those like brands I think everybody's familiar with. Like it's such a strong brand at this stage. When did you get involved with that?
So I got involved. So firstly, Therapy was founded in 2002 by my dad. I got involved in 2009. So at the time, my plan was after college to go to get into investment banking. You know, as a kid, I used to always watch Wall Street and kind of used to love the kind of the life of these investment bankers, the parties, the money. And I said, that's what I want to do. The financial crisis had hit in 2009. So I applied for loads of investment bank jobs in London. No one got back to me. And then at the time, we only had one therapy and dad asked me, do you want to get involved? So I originally got involved in kind of the marketing department. And then within 6 months, dad said to me, do you want to take over the running of the company? So I was, 22 years old, hadn't got a clue. And I said, yeah, go on, I'll give it a bash. And here we are today.
Just like that. He really spotted an opportunity there, didn't he? Like,
yeah.
He was very, very ahead of the game.
Yeah, no, in fairness to my dad, yeah, he was a visionary. He was always kind of ahead of the game. And he obviously, at the time, the aesthetic industry was kind of all these mom and papa and these dermatologists doing, the prices were very, very expensive. No one had brought it to the high street. So he saw an opportunity to bring it to the high street, but not only bring it to the high street, but make it more affordable and accessible. So that's what like therapy does.
But even in 2002, like aesthetic clinics now are part of the normal day-to-day of life.
Yeah.
But in 2002, I don't think they were.
No. Like I think, you know, products like Botox, people didn't talk about it, but now it's very common. I say nearly every second woman's getting it done and even every nearly second man at the moment. So but back then no one was talking about it. And if they were talking about it, they weren't proud of it. Whereas I think nowadays people are proud of saying they get Botox and all these various treatments.
Well, it's discussed like a health treatment.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's what I was kind of keen to chat about, because it was almost taboo. It was almost like, oh, celebrities get it done and blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of hinted at but not talked about, whereas now it's totally commonplace. But I love to kind of unpack that a little bit, because for your dad to spot that, like, that's a real insight. But also not to spot it, but then for you and him to kind of go, right, let's double down on this. Like,
yeah.
So what did you, when you got involved, like what was your plan?
So when I got involved, I said Ireland was going through kind of financial crisis. you know, I don't remember, I met him in 2009. Like, it's this doom and gloom, it's very negative sentiment. I was young, naive, and didn't have a clue what's going around. So I said, let's expand. And everyone was telling me, you're mad to expand. So I kind of said, fuck it, let's do it. And we went to Galway first, and it took off like a rocket.
Really?
Literally like a rocket.
Why'd you pick Galway?
So I'm big into kind of the data. So when I was looking at our Google Analytics, Galway was the kind of second highest amount of kind of hits to the website, but from Galway. And a kind of the first employee of our company, Deirdre Dowden, she's one of our kind of our best employees, was from Galway as well. So I said, Deirdre, let's open up in Galway. And we took off like a rocket.
Wow. And what, like, how did you grow awareness? Because I think back then, what, like we talked about, it wasn't that common. So how did you, like, I suppose, make it accessible? I suppose the question I'm trying to ask you.
So firstly, with Galway, I'm going to give you a little secret here. There's a paper called the Galway Advertiser, and is the Bible in Galway. They say people don't read papers, but they read the Galway Advertiser in Galway. And we used to do like a full page ad in that. And then we'd have hundreds of people the next day ring us up.
Really?
It was insane.
2009, 10, 11.
Even to this day.
Really still?
Even still. Like, cause people say to me, papers are dead. And I agree broadly with it. But there's one paper that is kind of the Galway Advertiser. If you're looking to set up in Galway, get into the Galway
Advertiser. Shout out the Galway Advertiser. Yeah, yeah. But isn't that like a great lesson in insights? We were talking about there, I was telling you about a viral clip that went crazy on Instagram last month. It's those little gems you find.
Yeah.
You unpick, you go through the data and you unpick a little gem. Like the Galway Advertiser, you have to have boots on the ground, right?
Yeah, oh, you have to. That's the key. Like everything having boots on the ground. Even like when we went to America, like Kate and my sister moved over there. And our American business wouldn't have taken off as quickly if we didn't have boots on the ground. I think for any business out there, you need to have your own boots on the ground, your own people particularly, who know your business.
Because a lot of conversations like this is where insights come from.
Yeah.
Two people sitting down in a room, having a chat, talking about business, but also talking about life. And we had a really comprehensive chat there. Like, you get to know people in a very, very different way. Getting those insights, you're not going to really get those remotely.
No, not at all.
Like, remote is unbelievable. Hybrid is incredibly powerful. It's here to stay. But like those little gems of insights. So what else in the early days was kind of like a tipping point? Obviously Galway was a tipping point, I guess. And what else in the early days do you kind of look at and go, that was a crucial to our success?
Well, if I look back, I think time is everything. I think we're expanding at the right time. I think the kind of the aesthetic industry was on the rise. And at the time, there wasn't that much competition. So we're very kind of fortunate at the time. So I think we got lucky between them two effects, the right time and we had the right product. They're probably the key factor, and obviously the people. You know, we're very fortunate, like, you know, therapy success has been down to the people. It's not me, it's not my sister Katie, it's our people. We've hired amazing people that, like, you know, I'm very confident the therapy business is going to be one of the biggest, like, brands in the aesthetics industry in the world because the people in the business, we got some world-class people.
How do you find good people? Because that is the key thing that all businesses, especially in 2024, are struggling with, is finding and then retaining them. So tell me about finding first.
So finding first, I think good people find good people. So I think that law of attraction, that's what when we kind of hire high caliber people, then you attract other high caliber people. So that's the first off. And then kind of retention, like what we do for our people is we gave our key people a stake in our company. They have shares in the company.
Right.
So as the company grows, they grow, and hopefully they'll all make a few quid, please God.
Hmm. Okay, that's an interesting one. So that's how you attract and keep good talent.
Yeah, yeah. So we did growth shares. So we gave away a couple of percent to the company, to the kind of our senior management team. And I think that's key, particularly for keeping the high quality people.
Hmm. I like that good people find good people, because it's one of those real, very obvious insights. But then when you just think about it logically, finding a standard and holding a standard, right?
Yeah.
People have to do that. That's inherent in the business. But like, good people know good people. I always say that. Exactly. That's how I get all my guests, right? I'll ask you, I'll be tapping you up for guests after this. But like, good people know good people as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And like,
that's,
you build up people like you build up a network around you. So bring me back then to the early days, like you're 22 and you got involved.
Yeah. Yep.
What was it like kind of taking the reins there? Because you were taking over from your dad and like... What was that like?
Well, firstly, I didn't have a clue, if I'm honest. I was naive. And that was probably an advantage at the time because I didn't have fear. I didn't really look at risk. I just kind of just had this self-belief that everything we do was going to work. And I was mad looking back at that now.
Where'd that come from?
I think from my dad. I think when I was brought up, you know, my dad kind of told all of us that you can do it. You felt like a superstar after him. Since like I was 2 years old, he was like, yes, you can do it, you can do it. So he always encouraged us. He encouraged us to open businesses. He encouraged us all the time. And I think that, and now with my two children, that's something I'm going to really instill in my children, that self-belief from an early days, because it does have an impact.
It's the ultimate gift, isn't it? I chat about that with my wife a lot, like what do we want to give our daughter? And it's mainly that. It's happiness and confidence. Because if they believe you can, you can. It's such an incredible gift to give your kids. How do you want to instill that? Like what behaviors do you want to give them?
To my kids? I think that self-belief, you can do anything. Anything's possible. There's no mountain not big enough. And then obviously to be nice to people, you know, I think one thing that I've still, particularly in therapy, is like, let's be nice. You don't have to be a dickhead. You can be nice and still do well. So I think be nice, treat people with respect. Everyone's equal, you know, whether you're a billionaire, millionaire, carpenter, plumber, you're all the same, and treat everyone equally.
Who was kind to you in the early stages, apart from your dad? Who else was kind to you?
I think, who's kind to me? I think I'm very fortunate the people around me in the business. And then I've always kind of been fortunate to have a business network around me that always supported and guided me. So I think like most people, I think in Ireland are generally kind. You know, I think Irish people were good people.
There is an unusual network here. Isn't there? There's like a really, might have its faults in terms of begrudgery and things like that. But inherently people want you to succeed. People close to you will push you forward if you find the right people, right?
100%.
You're talking about good people and good people. Yeah. That's up to you though. You have to be a little bit ruthless with who you surround yourself with at times as well, because there can be a lot of negativity in you, but it's up to you to do that.
Yeah.
If you hang out with the same people who are negative, well then that's your choice. You're bringing that negativity into you. So Galway, what was next? So
yeah.
You have two outlets now.
Yeah,
so had two. You one in Dublin and
one
in Galway?
One in Dublin. We had one in Mull Street, Dublin, which is our first one. So then we went to Galway and then we went to Limerick. Limerick, or what they used to say to me back then, Stab City, saying, don't go to Limerick. They have no money in Limerick. And Limerick at that time, Dell closed down, which is one of the biggest employers.
Yeah,
they kind of had 2,000 employees. Yeah. They let go.
Really hurt
the
city.
So it was really, really grim. So it was very funny at the time. I found a location. And like, if I look back, it was in a hairdresser. In the back of the hairdresser, there's this beauty place. And they wanted to get rid of it. And they asked me, here, would you take this? And I was like, this is a back of a hairdresser. Like, this is a bit mad. Mm. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. And I think we got our payback within 2 weeks.
What?
And after that, we bought a building on Cruiser Street, Limerick. And we opened another therapy. Limerick was actually a bigger success than even Galway.
Why?
I have no idea.
I love when people are honest.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think,
but isn't there a lesson there just in taking the chance, right? Because I think people, that's why I love these chats with people like you, because on the outside looking in at you, people are like, oh my god, if he's at all figured it out.
No, far from it.
Right. You do now. None of us do, but I that's why I love having these chats, because just the honesty of like the early days of like, because people, that's the danger of social media nowadays. Yeah. Everyone looks at you and go, finished product, there we go. They compare, there's a great saying that they compare your chapter 12 to their chapter 1. And they go, I can never get to like where Philip is, because...
Well, I think what, even when I look back, like it takes time. Like I've been going at this 14 years. We didn't get to where we are today. It was a long, gruesome time. It was tough. And like, I think one thing a lot of companies do and a lot of people do, they look too far ahead. Just take it month by month, year by year. Don't get like, I know all these companies do these 5-year plans. We do these 5-year plans as well, but it's nearly, just look at the week ahead, the simple basics. And before you know it, that compound effect, and before you know the business just grows and grows. And that's my advice to anyone. Just don't look too ahead. And before you know it, you'll be bigger than you think.
I love that. Take the next logical step. I'm going to absolutely shame myself now. People know I'm a nerd, but it's okay.
Yeah.
Me and my wife were away on holidays last week, and she was watching Emily in Paris, and I was sitting there watching it too, kind of. And she just comes out with this thing. She goes, "Oh, I've always wanted to be someone's mentor." And your one's like, "Oh, what should I do?" She goes, "I've learned a lot. Just take the next logical step." And I was like, "Emily,
yeah, that's yeah.
it. It is though, isn't it?
It's like, only good at the Emily in Paris. My wife's trying to get me into it.
I'll tell you, fair. guilty pleasure. It's, you know what? It's one of those things, because I watch a lot of like business content, sport content. Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things you kind of watch. And like, there's a lot. My wife's thing is like, that's a you program. This is a me program. And we watch our two different programs. And there's certain programs that are like, we'll guiltily kind of give into each other on. It's all right. it's worth watching. It's very light, very easy. But like that logical step, how do you balance that then? Because people do get their head turned so much, especially early stage entrepreneurs. And I love these insights from people like you who've been there and done it, because they can get their head turned by going, you have to have it all figured out. You have to have these plans. You have to have this and that and the other. And people confuse them with so much complexity that they don't even get started. They just get stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that next logical step with having a plan?
I think keep it simple. Everyone has these kind of, sometimes these sophisticated business plans, and most plans don't work, let's be honest. Yeah. I don't know how many plans I've said and how many actually happened, very few. So I just keep it very simple, you know, back to basics. You know, in our business, when I look at what are the key metrics of success, customer satisfaction. So we obsess over that. You know, what are conversion rates or things. So there's three or four key metrics that we just keep simple and focus on.
Okay.
So
that's core metrics, core and everything else follows,
and
trickle
just
down.
Don't get distracted from anything else.
I think that's interesting, because on paper, you have a very complex business.
Yeah.
What you do is, you know, healthcare, fertility, very complex, serious things.
Yeah.
So I think the beauty is keeping it simple, right?
Yeah.
So how do you merge the two then? Keeping it simple, but then running a very, I'd imagine it's quite regulated. There's a lot of medical things involved here. You know, so you're dealing with quite serious things. So how do you walk that line?
Yeah. Well, I think if I look at our business, it's regulated. So you need to have the kind of different skill sets. So obviously our fertility business, we've got a kind of Dr. John Kenley is our medical director. We have a person choosing compliance, look at all the kind of regulation and all stuff. So it's having kind of the right people in the right positions is key. You can't do everything. I'm not like, you know, and that's one thing I've probably been successful in. I've got the right people around me to have skill sets that I don't have, and recognizing that you as an entrepreneur can't be good at everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what you kind of have to be honest with yourself.
So self-awareness is the key thing here.
Yeah.
How did you enter businesses then you wouldn't have known a lot about? I think that's, there's conflicting advice here. People are like, oh, only stick to your strengths. Only think, solve your own problems. There's conflicting advice. How have you entered into new territories and new areas where you haven't necessarily maybe known a lot about?
Well, if I look at like, say, fertility, we opened that a couple of years ago. I hadn't had a clue about fertility, but I used to talk to all my friends who are going through the fertility problems and just discussing the problem they're having. So I had no idea about fertility. So what I did there, I did research, met several people in this industry, understand what the problem in the sector was, and then it's got the right people around. So when we opened Therapy Fertility, 3-4 years ago, what I found out is 30% of Irish people are going abroad. And the main reason why they were going abroad for fertility was price. So when I went around and asked kind of the various fertility clinics, like each patient was paying 10 to 15,000 euros per cycle. And not every Joe so has that kind of money. So I just couldn't understand why fertility was so expensive. And when I looked into it, the reason why it was so expensive is there wasn't much competition in Ireland at the time. So all these kind of, a lot of the kind of fertility clinics were owned by private equity. So they can kind of manipulate and charge these high premium prices because there wasn't much competition at the time. So when we launched it, we kind of really disrupted the sector. I kind of hired kind of the best people in the sector. So Dr. John Kenny is our medical director. He was a medical director at Sims, which at the time was one of the largest fertility clinics. He was very kind of, like myself, shared the view why he didn't understand why fertility was so expensive, because it shouldn't be. And then we hired Gráinne Doyne, who was actually the kind of chief operating officer of kind of Sims. And before we kind of opened up, we kind of sat down, the three of us, friends, 6 months, just looking problem solving. How can we simplify the process here? How can we make this more affordable? Because so many people in business do the same thing every day without actually thinking, ask themselves, why do I do what I do? And if you actually take that step back and you've asked yourself these kind of questions, you're going to find amazing solutions.
Simplification.
That's what
it all comes down to. And especially in medical, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
You go into a medical setting, you're already nervous, you're already apprehensive, you're scared, you're worried about the money, you're worried about the outcome, and then kind of blinded.
Yeah.
You're blinded by the advice. No, just do this and just do that. You're like, okay, sign of the thing, your head's spinning, you come out and you really don't know. Like, and Ireland needs more of that. Very clear. I talk a lot about longevity in the pod. I've been working with a longevity doctor now for 5 years. Like, that's another area where you're kind of going, it's very new, it's very kind of hidden. People don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
When I started talking about it, people were like, well, why are you going to the doctor to get your bloods done? I was like, are you sick? I'm like, no, I don't want to get sick.
Yeah.
Like, there's another area where you're kind of going, people don't really have the exposure because they don't know to go to the doctor when they're really sick.
Oh, 100%. That's actually something I'm really, really passionate about, that preventative healthcare piece, because, you know, someone needs to bring this to the high street, like we brought it to aesthetics, and get that awareness to people, because so many people, unfortunately, are dying when they shouldn't be dying.
It makes no sense. So we had Breen Curtin, VP of Global Marketing for Whoopin yesterday, and we had a huge chat about longevity. Like,
yeah.
And like, to be able to have a Whoop on your arm, to be able to get your bloods done every 6 months with full markers for everything, like, that's science fiction stuff 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Or would it cost you millions?
Yeah.
Whereas now we have this accessibility, but it probably will take someone like you to come in and go, right, longevity clinics on every corner.
Yeah,
like,
I think that's the future. That's going to happen.
I honestly do.
No.
I'm so bullish on that, and I keep talking about it. Just burst that myth.
Yeah.
Like you've done fertility, like you've done with aesthetics.
Yeah.
Just stop it being taboo. Like, we went through our own journey a couple of years ago, having our daughter. And it's only when I started talking about it, people were like, we had two miscarriages ourselves.
Yeah.
We've gone through fertility. We've gone through this.
Oh,
we've
so suffered common. Loss.
It's scarily common.
Yeah.
Scary. But again, there's real parallels here between the aesthetics. Wasn't really talked about, still isn't hugely.
Yeah.
There's a lot of perceived shame and guilt and secrecy, but it is changing.
Yeah, you know, it is changing. And likewise with fertility, like, even myself there, I had my baby Harry, which I was telling you there, 8 weeks ago. My wife and I had three cycles of IVF failed cycles. We luckily got on a third. She got pregnant. And, you know, what is really so, it's, you know, even people like me, I went to therapy for Tilly and luckily got the child, but like, it's normal. You know, it's hard to create babies, you know, so it's...
Despite what you're told when you were young,
it's very hard.
Yeah, it's hard, you know? And I like people having honest conversations, like, because no one says it to you.
You're
like, oh God, just don't get someone pregnant. Like, when you're in college, Jesus Christ, just don't get her pregnant. You're like, oh, cool, okay. And that sticks in your brain, the old Catholic Ireland thing of like... mad notions sticks in your brain, but it's only you're having conversations like this and having companies like therapy where you're kind of going, oh, it can be challenging. Not fear mongering, but it can be challenging going, look, these are steps you can take. And even since I've spoken about openly, and my wife speaks about it openly, like, friends of ours have kind of gone, oh, I'm going to get I'm going to be proactive, I'm going to check, I'm going to get my levels done. Amazing, because then you have options, right? The worst thing in life is just not to have options.
Yeah, 100%.
Especially when it comes to your health. If you have no options, that is the worst feeling in the world. So it's really interesting to get Ian to talk about this. But bring me back first to the aesthetics. So you have Limerick, Galway, you have Dublin.
Yeah.
How many do you have now? Just let's give
so
it context.
We've got 77 therapy clinics worldwide. So we're kind of the largest in Ireland. We're the largest in the UK, and we expanded in the US there, got this a year ago, and we've got two more opening in the next 2 months in the US. So for us, the kind of the key markets that we're kind of focused on probably now is the kind of the UK and the US. Ireland's a great country, but like, it's too small.
There has to be a saturation point,
right? Yeah, and we're kind of close to that, unfortunately, in Ireland. So this is why we have to go abroad if we want to grow.
Mm. It's good to have that ambition.
Yeah.
We talked about bringing the podcast abroad.
Like, Ireland's 5 million people. We're an English-speaking country. I think more Irish business need to start looking abroad. The UK is on our doorstep. It's an hour away with 65 million people. Like, I don't understand why there isn't more Irish businesses over there.
I go to Manchester a lot for football. And I have the same realization every time. I don't know why.
Are you a Man United fan?
Massive.
Oh, yeah, I'm same. It's depressing at the moment. Oh, God.
Do you know what? I was putting my daughter down last night. She was a bit sick and I was putting her down to sleep and the match was on. I was getting, my dad was pinging me notifications. Two up. Two all.
No, I'm depressed.
I was like, no, I'm going to bed. And then I went to 3-2. I was like, I got out of bed last night. I went downstairs and watched the last 20 minutes. Oh,
I can't even watch it now. It's got that bad. I've given up.
We were talking about it earlier. I was on the ferry back from Spain there on Sunday and I was all excited. I was like, oh, they'll have the match on. So I'm down big screen in the bar. I was watching it on the ferry and the ferry's like stormy. So I'm sitting there like holding on to the chair like this, watching the United. And I was sicker by the end, just watching that. Anyway, I won't even go into that. It's too traumatic. It's a positive part. But yeah, I go to Manchester all the time.
Yeah.
Over to football like 3-4 times a year. And every time I'm there, I'm like, oh, just the energy and the ambition and the scale. It never leaves me that sense of wonder of the scale of the UK, like literally 50 minutes away.
Oh, yeah.
How did you decide to expand into the UK then?
How did I? So,
because it seems logical, but it's not. What is it? Simple, not easy, or easy, not simple?
So, I've always had a kind of burning desire to go to the UK ever since I was young. I always kind of manifest on it. So when we opened kind of the UK first, we actually decided to go to Scotland. And the reason why we went to go to Scotland was I wanted to make some mistakes in Scotland first before I went to places like London. So we opened in Glasgow and Edinburgh at the time. And we got so many learnings that we kind of, you know, adapted our business model a little bit, made changes because you got to...
So your gut feeling was right. They were experiments. So I call this the entrepreneur experiment for one simple reason. That's all I believe business is. It's micro experiments done every single day. And you just go, next logical step, try it, fail, learn. What were the learnings then in Scotland? Because obviously your gut told you there was going to be learnings. What were the learnings?
So Scottish people are tight. First off, so we had to change our pricing.
Interesting.
They're kind of, I think the UK consumer in general, for any kind of Irish business looking to go abroad, they are a bit tighter than kind of the Irish people.
Why is that? They have more choice.
Just disposable income. They don't have, if you look at this, like the kind of the average wage in Ireland versus the UK, we're making double the money.
Wow.
So I think that's first off. So we learned that. And just a few other things about the advertising, like what worked in Ireland didn't necessarily work in the UK, what we found.
Why not?
I don't really know. They're just different, you know. It's no different to kind of Northern Ireland. We're obviously in Northern Ireland and our marketing that in Northern Ireland has to be a little bit different than Southern Ireland. Hmm. So it's...
Culturally, like
I think, a little bit different. Back to kind of, we learned so much and through them experiments in Scotland that when we went to London, we took off like a rocket.
Right.
And like even now, today in London, we've got 28 clinics in London.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So like, but if we hadn't made them mistakes in Scotland, I don't think we would have accelerated as quickly.
I love that strategy though. Like, you know, you took the next logical step, but you were very clear as to how you were going to approach the UK. Like that's a real good learning there for people as in like, you don't have to maybe go in a straight line. You can kind of go, right, logical step here is to go somewhere with a little bit lower stakes.
Yeah, making your mistakes.
Probably lower cost to set up.
Exactly.
Lower cost to hire.
Exactly.
Okay, that's a really, really interesting strategy. Tell me this. What are the most common treatments, the most popular treatments?
Most common treatments. So, like, Botox is extremely popular now. Like I said, it's like we're growing a double-digit growth every year. We're actually, Therapy is actually the largest provider of Botox in Europe at the moment. Wow. So we're Allergan, which is the kind of the producer of Botox, biggest customer in Europe. And I think this, men and women are just getting it done. I think is they're realizing because so many women and men invest hundreds in these kind of skincare brands, which don't work. Botox works. You know, you get it and straight away you see visible results.
You have that immediate impact.
You have that immediate, like, I get it done because I used to frown like shit, like, and...
I thought you were just happy to see me.
Oh, no. So it's amazing. So I have no problem saying that I get Botox. It's great.
Yeah. And how often do you have to get it done then?
Every 4 or 5 months.
Okay.
So twice a year for me.
Yeah.
And happy days.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. People are changing their routines and their behaviors now.
Yeah.
People have been more proactive.
Oh, 100%.
As opposed to, like, even when you see people go on holidays now, if you see someone burning their skin, you're like, what the hell did you do? Whereas before, like, people would lie there. Like, people are so much more savvy now.
About, oh, yeah,
like,
very educated.
Not going to, like, lie in the sun. I'm going to get, like, a bronze or a moisturizer or a fake tan or something. People will do that instead of, like, lying there burning the hell out of their skin.
So is that what you were doing when you went to Spain, wasn't it?
Look, this is all natural. It's what a month in Marbella gives you. I actually don't tan that well. It frustrates the life out of me. But that's really interesting. So then talk to me. You went Scotland.
Yeah.
London.
Scotland, London. Then we kind of went the outskirts of London. So
again, were you relying on data?
Everything we do is based on data.
So what are the data points you look at?
So firstly, like, we'd kind of got a kind of third party company, Commercial Due Diligence, on the kind of UK and where the white space opportunities. We look at the kind of the competition in certain areas, the population sizes.
So you got them to do like a research base?
Yeah, research bases. We looked at kind of our customer cohort and we kind of said, where are our customers living? So like, nowadays, a lot of most of our decisions on our kind of property would be data-based.
Okay. It's really interesting. Yes, you got an external company to do it. Yeah. Like, a lot of people wouldn't actually think that.
Yeah.
Because it's probably more cost efficient, time efficient for you to just go to like an expert source.
Yeah. Well, I think there's, you know, a lot of things I look at every day by my gut. But as you kind of get bigger and broader and you want to open hundreds, I think you need the data to back it up because, you know, your gut not going to be right 100% of the time, especially in new countries and new territories.
How did you learn to manage, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15? Because it's a very different business to manage one. Like, you come in managing one, then two, then three. Yeah. Like, how did you develop as an entrepreneur and founder?
I did external coaching. I think, you know, I said I've always been very ambitious. And if you want to kind of grow, you need to upskill yourself. And I was very kind of aware of that I need to improve myself, and I still need to improve. I'm far from the finished article. I have so much more improvement I need to do, and being very conscious of that and always looking every day to make kind of improvements. I had this philosophy, which we haven't heard about, the Kaizen principle, continuous improvement every day, is something I live and breathe by.
Well, that's why we're sitting in this burning studio.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I believe the same. After every season, I do a review.
Yeah.
I'll say, right, what worked, what didn't. And it's not about ripping up the playbook. It's about tweaks. It's about, right, how can we tweak 5, 10%?
Yeah, find marginal improvements.
Marginal gains. Dave Brailsford's going to take us to the promised land of winning the Champions League again.
Yeah.
But it is, though, jokes aside, it is about those continued improvements. I think too many people will pivot off course. They'll go, oh, that's not working. I'm just going to completely rip up the rule book and start from scratch. Like, it's all about just continually improving what you're already doing. And then, for the external coaching, like, what form did that take? Because I think it's interesting to talk about that, because I think a lot of founders are now starting to explore it. I've worked with a performance coach, Shane Craddock.
Brilliant. I went to Shane.
Yeah, I went to Shane.
Yeah.
Really, really powerful.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really good. So what did you want to improve?
I think a lot of kind of entrepreneurs is the structure. Like, a lot of, if you ask most entrepreneurs, they're not very structured. It's putting that kind of that structure to your week and kind of that focus. I think I needed support. Help on that, particularly as we started to scale. Yeah. So I think that's where people like Shane are very good at, is giving you kind of that focus and kind of very task orientated and where to spend your time. So I think, stuff like that is what I kind of looked at.
How do you manage your time? Because this is something I ask every single high performer that comes in, because I think that's one of the greatest indicators of your success. There's a phrase, show me your calendar, I'll show you your future. How do you manage your time? Because I think that's so important for especially younger founders to learn from someone like you, going, this is where you leverage time.
I think if you really need to discipline with your diary, you need to always look at the week ahead. Like, every Friday, what I'll do, I'll plan the next week today. So I look at my weekend and plan out. And what's really important to me is having free time. I need time, particularly on Friday, just to brainstorm. So I have around 4 or 5 hours every Friday just for blank time where I just kind of think about things or read or just dossing time.
That's so important, though, because there's a busyness culture.
Yeah.
There's a hustle culture, and it's an epidemic. This busyness culture, having like back-to-back calls. I'm allergic to it.
Yeah.
I got up an extra like half an hour early this morning because it's been a really busy week and I just wanted to calm the brain. I knew like we'd really important interview today. And I was like, right, I need to calm my brain. So I just read for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Just read, just brought my state back down. I think it's very important. Like I was even planning, I was planning next week and I was, it's calls. And I was like, nope, never doing back-to-back calls because your brain just can't process. No. Like, bah, 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 bah.
Too many so many people have meetings for the sake of having meetings. Oh. What's actually the purpose of the meeting?
Send me an email first.
Yeah.
Tell me
yeah.
what you want to talk about yeah. and then we'll have a call. Because otherwise you're just spinning your wheels. You're spending half the meeting talking about what you want to talk about.
Yeah, talking shite.
So you plan ahead that free time. I think that's a real good insight. What else do you do then? I think on a day-to-day basis, like how do you make sure you're moving through on the most important thing? Because I think that's another thing that people get distracted by. You talked about focus there. Focus is huge. How do you make sure like in a world full of distraction, you're working on the most important thing?
Well, it's back to kind of what I said earlier is kind of every business has probably no more than four key KPIs and they need to be non-negotiable all the time. So like, I never get distracted away from them, four or five non-negotiable things. So that's what I kind of think is keep the basics and, you know, don't try to go too overboard. I think, you know, just stick to them four or five things and that's it.
Mm. At what point then did you know it was right to expand beyond the therapy clinics?
Well, it's very, very interesting. So when we set up Tana Therapy Fertility a couple of years ago, I was kind of, him and Horn would we do it under the therapy brand. And because it's obviously very medical, from going from aesthetics to fertility is a big step, you know? And like I said, when I was doing a bit, talking to a few people, they thought I was a bit mad thinking on the therapy brand. But then we said to do it on the therapy brand and therapy.
What was the pushback?
I just did from doing aesthetics to fertility. I think some people said that's a big jump, you know, because, you know, so that was the main reason. But obviously we did it under the therapy brand and it was the best idea we probably ever made. It took off like a rocket. So, and I kind of always knew that was going to work. When I look back, you know, I didn't actually do even a business plan for that. And I've done every other business we have done a business plan, but I just knew my gut was going to work. It's because the people I'd taken on. So I'd, like I said, Dr. John Kennedy, who is just the best doctor in Ireland and kind of the soundest doctor in Ireland as well.
How do you convince the best doctor in Ireland to come work for you?
How do I convince? Oh, it took him a while. He said no a few times and I just kept at it. I kept Adam until he eventually said yes.
Cracked.
Yeah, and obviously we gave him equity in the kind of business we were to keep. But I knew the doctor was one of the most important things, particularly in that type of business.
Yeah,
without doubt. So that probably helped as well. And as obviously we hired in Gronia, who kind of runs Therapy Fertility. And like, I didn't even think about the money, even for that when we set up that business. I actually wasn't really motivated by the money in that type of business. I actually genuinely wanted to help people. Mm. Like I said, so many of my friends had struggled with fertility and I just felt that I could actually solve a problem. And it's the most, you know, like I was wearing a wedding there a few months ago. I hadn't seen one where this person in a while. He played football with me when I was younger and he comes up and he goes, Philip, thanks so much. I go, thanks for what? Me and my wife have been trying for 5 years to have a kid and we went to therapy for Tilly and my wife got pregnant. Thank you so much. And I felt amazing.
There can't be any better feelings.
Oh, it's the best feeling to be honest, in the world.
Like that gift, like having recently, like, yeah. Willow's nearly two now, but like having gone through that recently, like just that overriding emotion.
Oh,
like you've just had a new baby as well. Like that feeling is just, there's nothing that replicates that. But to be able to help someone achieve that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like businesses, I always say you should be having fun. Like you should be enjoying what you do. Like if you're not enjoying what you do, just try something else because life's too short to be miserable 8 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking about it probably 24. But like if you can find that sweet spot of like, enjoying what you do, but helping someone reach one of the most fundamental milestones. It's probably the biggest milestone here.
Oh, yeah.
Realistically.
I think we've, since we opened, we've nearly created over 1,000 babies, which is remarkable.
That's
that crazy. Potentially wouldn't be created without us.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't. They would probably try it somewhere else, whatever, but like 1,000. Like that.
Yeah.
Like that's wild.
Yeah.
Just physically I'm picturing them, like, how many Bethesda people together. Like, that's...
We're actually having a baby party in Christmas. So we get all the babies.
No.
Going. Yeah, it's a Christmas party.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
that we
class.
Do. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hate Christmas parties. That actually sounds like it could be good crack.
You can come. You can bring your babies up.
That's cool. Like, that's, they're the fun things. Yeah. That
it's not going to be that wild, though, as you imagine, with a baby party.
You know, my favorite, like, thing to get invited to now? It's a breakfast.
Breakfast, yeah.
I love it. My mate, he works in Amazon, Ed, and he's inviting me to a breakfast in a few weeks' time in the Shelburne. And I was like, look, to be honest, you could invite me to anything. I was like, I'm there. Breakfast?
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
We get to catch up over breakfast. If it's a nighttime event now, I really have to think long and hard about
it. The nighttime. I had one last night. Oh, they're gruesome.
It's a hard sell.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. Okay, so therapy clinics and then therapy facility. Yep. Again, juggle. Talk to me about the juggling piece of, like, you've therapy set up and now you're moving into a new area.
Yeah.
How do you balance that off? Because starting a new business is all encompassing.
Yeah. So back to having the right people. I've been very fortunate, like in, say, the fertility business, I've got world-class people there. I don't need to be in the business anymore. At the start, it needed me kind of brainstorm on the concept, on the kind of the patient journey, how we're going to disrupt the market. But like that business, I only spend probably, I have a meeting once a week with Gronia and Dr. John Kendi, and that's all consumes my time.
Okay.
The people I have in place are brilliant. The business doesn't need me now.
People, structure, systems.
Yeah, pretty much.
What excites you now?
What excites me is there's very few Irish companies that make it big internationally. You like the Ryanair has, and a few other, CRH, but there's been very few. And what excites me is therapy's going to be one of those. I have no doubt in the future, therapy's going to be the biggest aesthetic brand in the world. And that excites me.
I love when people call their shot. I bloody love it, because that's what we need in Ireland. Yeah. We need people calling their shot. I absolutely adore it, because... if you don't call it, like, this false humbleness.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing well.
Yeah.
We're doing well. That could mean, like, you turn over $5,000 a day or $500,000 a day.
You have to think big. You have to think big. Like, what's the point in life? You know, I'm always go big or go home.
Well, you've had a lot of success.
Yeah.
But it's come from graft as well. Yeah. You're not sitting here after 6 months going, that's the other problem. If people are going, I'm going to make a dent in the universe and they haven't even started yet. You've got the research, you've got the evidence, you've got as the kids say, you've got the receipts, right? You're coming with a bank of evidence behind you to show that that's possible. Talk to me then about, like, the competitors emerging, because you got in early, which is a blessing and a curse, because you had to think to yourself, but you also had to educate people, I guess, about it and make them aware. So you've like paved the way for, like, other people to come in behind you now. How do you handle new competitors coming in?
I think in any sector, competition is going to come in. You just have to be better. So when I look at our sector is very fragmented. If I look at, like, say, the US, 90% of the market is made up of independents. Consolidation is going to happen. So what's happening in the aesthetic industry in particular is all these private equities are coming in, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because a lot of these kind of private equities are very short-term thinking.
Five-year window, right?
Yeah. And I think we've been fortunate that we've been kind of more long-term. You know, we're kind of family-owned. The long-term is always kind of our goal. So I think the sector is big enough for more competition, and it's just about being better and always ahead of the competition. Mm. So like I said, in the UK, therapy is the biggest in the UK. Our kind of the second biggest competitor went bust. So we see a massive kind of opportunity to accelerate kind of our market share in the UK. And then, like I said, in the US, 90% of the market is made of independents. We've done kind of commercial due diligence on the US market, and there's a white space for over 20,000 clinics. So there's plenty of business out there for everyone, we think.
It just strikes me as one of those areas that the trust is just so fundamental.
Yeah.
If you're putting something in your body, do your research.
Yeah.
It scares me how much people don't.
Yeah.
But if you're swallowing something, you're getting something injected into you, maybe do your research.
100%. Because there's no regulation in markets like Ireland, even the UK. And there unfortunately is a lot of bad providers out there, you know, that don't do proper training. So we would love regulation. Mm. Because there should be. you know, if you're injecting something in your face, there should be a regulated market.
If you're injecting anything anywhere.
Yeah.
One of those things that like, don't think this is a great idea. I'm nipping down to get my nails done and a bit of Botox.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like they're very different offerings. Yeah, yeah. Like, why is there no regulation?
I don't know why. I think it's crazy. We've been kind of lobbying for it. We would like there to be regulation. We actually have our own regulatory body internally. So we'd really welcome the kind of regulation. And there should be. You know, like, the aesthetic industry is very big now. There's hundreds of thousands, millions of people getting it done every year. Mm. It needs to be regulated, and the government need to intervene.
Mm. Can't believe you don't have an outlet in Marbella yet.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I was in the gym last week and I was like, I think everyone here has had something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was cool. I was like, that's what I like about down there. Everyone just does their own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
No one gives a shit about what you're doing, what you're looking like, everyone's just living their own life.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And then talk about the opportunity, right? Because this does seem like a monster opportunity in the US and the UK. Yeah. You said Katie went over to the US. What was that transition like between kind of splitting focus then from the UK and Ireland to over there?
Yeah, well, I think first off, we always get our own kind of people on the ground in any market that we kind of opened up. So when we went in kind of the UK, we kind of, particularly in London, we brought our kind of our four best Irish managers who know our culture, who know our DNA, who know the kind of the therapy machine, how it works.
Brilliant. Okay.
And that was probably the reason it worked in the UK. And same thing, we went to the US, Katie moved over there with her family. And I don't think we would have taken off as quickly as we did in the US if Katie didn't do that. You see, the kind of the knowledge, the having boots on the ground, the inside track that you just don't get from here in Ireland. How can you know what's going on in New York living here in Dublin?
You can. Like, yeah. And this comes from experience, right? This comes from pattern recognition. I think all great entrepreneurs develop this. You knew Glasgow was different to London. Yeah. You knew London's going to different to Leeds. That sense of knowing.
Like, yeah.
You can't, all the research in the world won't tell you that. You can't read a research paper and go, I have a great sense of the culture.
Yeah.
Because culture can change, especially in New York, it can change from block to block.
Oh, yeah.
How has Katie found that transition?
Well, she just moved back there recently. She's over there for nearly 15 months. It was tough on her. She moved over there with her two kids, and they were at the time like 2 and 3.
Wow.
So I said she really struggled at the start to kind of adapt. And all she did was work. And like, her poor fella, Fiddy, like, had to take care of the kids, whereas Katie's working, you know, 9 to 9 every day in the clinic. Mm-hmm. She's on the ground, behind the reception, working. She got herself dug in there. So
that graft, though.
Graft, yeah.
That's
what you have to do. Like, and
I don't think people would understand that. Like, they look at your big business and they go, oh, yeah, they're kind of removed or whatever.
No,
like, to see that graft. Oh, like, yeah, that's like, what it takes, though, isn't it?
100%.
And it's both, right? It's been able to inject yourself and then eject yourself as well. Because if you stay injected, then you're going to have one clinic forever, right? You're going to be the busy fool kind of running around, sweeping the floor.
Yeah.
How has she then been able to kind of like help scale that quite quickly? Because obviously she got in there, got involved. Where was the first clinic?
It was in Flatiron. So she said she worked in the clinic. She wanted to understand the American customer, how they kind of, and we got, Katie provided so much data that we adapted for our marketing department, for other different areas.
Was it way different than you thought again?
Yeah, way different. I don't think, you can do all the research and all these things, but until you actually open up on the ground, actually listen to the customers, mm-hmm. you don't know.
What's happening in New York now? Because you hear all these varying different things about like cities are dead. So I'd actually like to expand this question a bit in terms of like, give me kind of insights into the cities, because I'm kind of obsessed with cities and how they're living now and how they're breathing after COVID. Like, Dublin isn't a funny old spot. I think it's some weird things happening in Dublin. Give me kind of an overview of how you feel the cities are developing, say Dublin, the UK and the US.
Yeah, well, firstly, Dublin hasn't come back since COVID. Like, it's not the same. Like, I work in the city centre, I'm there. It's just not as busy as used to, you know, 3 days a week it's busy. London's back. It's booming again. People are back to the office. Transport's jammed everywhere. And same in New York. So what we're seeing is the major cities, like the New Yorks, the Londons are back, but like the rural towns and cities just aren't the same.
That's the feeling I had. I'm always very careful about anecdotes because like it can be completely skewed.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I have. I'm in Dublin maybe 2 days a week like that. It just feels, I couldn't even put my finger on it. It just felt empty and a bit,
yeah, it's not the same. Even us in like in our like performance, like we have obviously city centre stores and our suburban locations now performing better than the city centre locations in Dublin.
I can see
Whereas
that,
before COVID, the city centre was always the number one.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's interesting about London. Yeah, I was in London recently. I was in Madrid and Malaga. Flying.
Yeah.
The buzz.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. Yeah. I kind of got a buzz off it because I was like, oh, this is what it feels like. That feeling of being in a buzzing city, it kind of plugs you in. Like you kind of get a recharge from it. And I was kind of wondering then, were you seeing that on the ground? So yeah, it is. Because I've chatted with so many other founders and I always ask them the same thing. I was like, how are you getting on in Dublin? And everyone's, so what's the future there? Like, how does it come back?
I think the government needs to intervene here. Like, because you look at the hospitality industry, like it's really struggling. And because, you know, the offices, you know, people not working in the office, it's killing city centres. It's killing it. More kind of coffee shops, more restaurants are going to close unless the government intervenes and get people back in the office.
And that's what makes a city is the independent outlets.
It's
the Irish owned and the Spanish owned or the British owned. You kind of go, yeah, you get an authentic experience. Because I obviously worked in the property sector for a good while and they were outlawing Airbnb. And I was like, you got to be really careful what you wish for here. Because the tourism sector, I don't think people understand how huge that is for Ireland.
Oh,
from March to October, our customer profile 180'd and it was American.
Yeah.
American were 90% of our customer base.
Yeah.
It's like, if that goes away, because they were able to come because they were able to get an Airbnb, they were able to bring the family. Hotels are great and all, but that is a different experience. And they were spending a fortune.
Oh, yeah.
They were coming here. They weren't just coming to Dublin. This is a bucket list thing. They were going Dublin, Cork, Galway, Cliffs and Moher, back to Dublin.
Yeah.
So they were spending tens of thousands of euro in Ireland.
Yeah, and then obviously this passenger cap now, which they've introduced, not going to help that either.
Like we're so exposed.
Yeah.
Like we're exposed on a couple of different areas. Like Stephen Kinsella on, as I was talking about before, and he was saying that we're very exposed to foreign direct investment. We're also very exposed to tourism.
Yeah.
And like we're now known as a really expensive place.
Oh, it is. It's, Dublin is very expensive.
We have been for a while, but now people are, like even when you travel, people are going, oh yeah, geez, I'd love to go to Dublin. And I'm like, I literally had a conversation with someone last week. I was like, you live in London though.
Yeah.
Why don't you come? It's like too expensive. Live in London and we're seen to be too expensive to come over for a weekend. Like I was like, that's mental.
Yeah. No, that's a worry.
It's a slippery slope, isn't it? Like, so what's kind of like the next big exciting project for you? Because you're clearly a man who loves projects and who loves to be moving.
So like for us is, we kind of, there's a big opportunity in the UK. Our second biggest competitor is Close. So we want to kind of really gain market share in the UK.
What happened there?
What happened there is they're kind of a historic brand in the UK, trading around 30 years, and they never changed with the times. When we kind of came in, we were kind of different, beautiful storefronted, a kind of a price point more accessible, and they never really adapted. The people like us coming in, and we kind of took market share off them. And unfortunately, that brand had too much debt. They're a private equity owned, and they're too leveraged. Mm. And then as we kind of took market share from them, they couldn't repay the banks, and the kind of the receivers were called in, and it was liquidated.
Wow. It just goes to show you like a good business can go bad.
Without the Kaizen,
right? If you're not at the forefront. I think that's why it's so important to have like owner-led brands as well.
Yeah. Well, I think what owners bring is that passion, you know, that passion and that drive, you know, and like it's infectious. You know, I say if you asked our people why they work for us, they love the passion, the drive that Katie and I have. Mm. So
what's it like working with your sister? I don't mean your sister specifically, but like working with a family is like, because obviously your dad started it and now you guys are behind it, which comes with like, I'd say it's amazing, but it's also pressure, is it?
Yeah. Like I'm kind of, firstly, it's hard with any work on any family member. As I always say, you probably treat your colleagues better than your family members, which is terrible.
So the family members are stuck with you.
Yeah, yeah.
The colleagues can leave.
Yeah, but I think I'm very fortunate. Katie and I kind of have, we work really well together. Like she has, where I'm weak, she's strong. And when she's weak, I'm strong. So we kind of can't, you know, we have skill sets that kind of, with skill sets that kind of complement each other. And we work really well. And I said, Katie's just so passionate from the brand and she's so passionate what she does. And it moves me forward as well. It motivates me. So, no, as I always say, we're yin and yang. It's brilliant.
So I always like to talk about the body, the brain and the business, kind of a holistic view of the founder. How do you look after your body?
So I play a good bit of sport. So I play football twice a week. I try to go to the gym when I can. I go swimming. I go to every Saturday, I go swimming down in Wicklow. I'm going to start getting into these baths now. I see that these ice baths are kind of starting getting really popular.
They're the new thing.
I need to try
jump
that.
On the bandwagon with me. It's
the
great.
If
you're used to sea swimming, you'll take to it like a duck to water, no pun intended.
Yeah. So, but like, yeah, I need to do sport like to keep me sane. If I don't do sport, my headspace isn't right.
Well, that leads me into my next question. It's like, how do you look after your brain and your mental fitness, mental health?
Yeah. Well, mental health, I think obviously the sport, by doing sport and keeping fit, that helps with my mental health. I think that's the key thing I find. I'm in better moods when I'm kind of exercising, going for a run. So I think that's key. I notice myself, if I'm not doing any exercise, my mental health changes.
Yeah, exact same. Yeah. There's a direct correlation. Yeah, like if I'm not training, might be immediate, but a day or two later, there's a fog. There's like heaviness, there's a lethargy. And then you don't train because you have no energy, and it's a real spiral. That's why I kind of keep a momentum up all the time. Like, I train a lot just purely for my physical health, but also for my mental health, because the two of them are just, they're synced. What does the future hold for you and therapy? Because there's obviously a lot gone on in 14 years?
Yeah, 14 years. Like
that's a rocket ship. Like,
Yeah. It's been a long time. And like I said, it's you know, like, I probably, what people need to understand with business is, if you want to be successful, you have to obsess, literally obsess on it. And I've been obsessed on this business for 14 years. From the moment I wake up in the morning to the moment I go in bed, I'm obsessing about it. So it's probably like, do I want to do that for all my life? Probably not. I said, I have two kids. I want to have a family. I have a family. I want to spend time because I'm not there when I'm there. Because I'm just thinking about work 24/7, which is not good. Long term, I think. So what I want is finding that balance that I can still work, but then be present with my family.
How do you get that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I struggle. Like, my wife always says to me, I have a problem. So like, please tell me if you know how I can do that.
It's an addiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
I speak about this all the time with founders. There's an addiction.
Yeah. But you have to be like that. Like, if I'm not like that, I don't think it'll work.
Yeah. Well, to get to your level, I don't think so. We talked earlier about elite sports people and stuff, and like, they're obsessed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you spend some time with them and you see the inner workings. There's no like a 50%.
No.
There's an obsession to really be the greatest.
Hopefully you're listening to the pod and you're feeling inspired. Maybe you want to do new things in your own business, or maybe you have that brilliant idea you've always wanted to bring a little bit further and see if it works. So why not right now? You listen to the majority of the guests in this show, and they've been helped by the local enterprise office at some stage in the journey. They have something for everybody. Whether you have that idea you want to develop, you want to get your products to new markets, you want to innovate your existing products, or you want to expand staff and premises, they have the supports to help. So why not today? If you want to start up or grow your business, then contact your local enterprise office today.
Going to do a quick fire round.
Oh, yep.
What book should every entrepreneur read?
Book. I think other people said the book Shoe Dog by Phil Knott. I think that book is remarkable. Just the journey on kind of Nike and what Phil Knight. I was really inspired by that book. It really kind of motivated me and kind of gave me that self-belief, yes, you can. So personally, I think that every aspiring entrepreneur should read that book.
Yeah, it's our most recommended book by a million miles.
Yeah.
The one thing I always kind of say is that it's a short space of time.
Yeah.
He did it in a very, you can't imagine a world without Nike now. Whereas like in, 20 years, you look at like that could be therapy. You could look at it and go, there's a therapy in every corner. They're absolutely everywhere. Yeah. There's therapy this, therapy that. So like it's very motivating.
Yeah.
It is a very, very good, it's just written beautifully.
Yeah.
It's my favorite kind of book is nonfiction that reads like fiction.
Yeah.
If I can find those, I'll devour them. What's something you'd learn the hard way?
Something to learn the hard way. So a few years ago, I decided to kind of set up a kind of therapy tech division. And I had this belief to build all these like CRM systems, replace all our existing kind of tools. I had a belief, we can do this. And I figure out probably very quickly that you're better off kind of buying instead of building everything. So that's something I kind of would say anyone kind of looking at tech business, try buy in most cases, because it's probably going to end up being a lot cheaper and probably better.
Stick to your knitting, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's the thing, is then stick to the zone of genius.
Exactly.
That's what people talk about. Find your zone of genius. Just nail it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's very easy to get distracted. And it does make sense. Like, logically, you kind of know the business better than anyone.
Yeah.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Everything. If I look back, say my family time, I haven't been present. You know, like, when I'm with my family, I'm not there. I'm still not there. And my wife says this all the time. So, that's hard. You know, but I'm just so obsessed. I can't stop myself. I'm obsessed with my work. I put my work ahead of my family, which isn't good.
Thank you for that honesty, by the way. Yeah. I think not a lot of people will be that honest. And it's very, I think it's heartening for people to talk openly about it, because there's a lot of taboo. So we've busted a lot of taboos here today. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
So I'm really passionate about preventive healthcare. Too many people die that shouldn't die. I want to really do something around this that can help people's lives. So, like, my sister Katie went for, like, try to get an x-ray there a few months ago, and she's waiting a couple of months, which is just crazy. I want to do something around the kind of educating people, bringing healthcare to the high street is something I would do at some stage of my life. And not for financial reasons, for the greater good, because someone needs to do this.
I'm in, 100%.
Yeah.
That has to happen.
Yeah.
Like, it just baffled me. Yeah. Like, I do it because I'm very proactive and I've spent time figuring it out, but, like, it should just be as easy as going to therapy. It shouldn't be like, oh, I got to ring this guy and then this guy and then I figure this out. So I've pieced it all together myself through just sheer grit, but that's not everyone has that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro. You can invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
So I'm actually investing in a company at the moment. It's set up by a guy called Mike Malone. He set up a company called Total Hair Restoration. And what Mike's trying to do with Total Hair Restoration is disrupt the whole kind of hair transplant market. He wants to make it more affordable. So probably 30-40% of Irish people are going abroad to countries like Turkey for hair transplant. He wants to disrupt that and to democratize this sector. So I'm getting involved with him and that, investing in that and kind of chairing his company. So so look out for that company. It's one to watch.
There you go. Good answer. I like when people have a very specific answer. I hate when people say an industry. That gives us nothing to kind of work on, because obviously this pod is about trying to inspire people and give people ideas to go, that's a good idea. Yeah, I've got experience in that. If you're starting again from zero in 2024, what would you start?
Good question. What would I start? If I don't have any money, I'd have to get into the business for not very capital intensive. So a coffee shop. I think the margins of coffee are really high. I love coffee personally. I drink around 3 or 4 times a day, so I'd be the best customer. Probably a coffee shop.
Okay. I like the way it's a normal answer.
Well.
It's not like I started a tech company in AI.
Yeah.
Very few people can do that. Most people can start their own coffee shop. What do you believe that other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
What do I find that people strongly disagree with? I have this mad theory. So I think there's going to be a revolution in the next few years, because you look at society, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, essentially. And I think you're going to, in the next 20, 30 years, there's going to be a revolution where all these kind of people are going to rebel against the rich people. I have a theory that's going to happen.
I like that. My theory is, in our lifetime, America will be fragmented.
Yeah.
It'll become all independent states.
Yeah.
You'll have a couple of states like California, Texas, New York, break off.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think,
that's my wild theory that no one asked. What's been your worst investment?
The way I kind of look at it, I'd be very kind of, my worst investment is my best investment, because I generally learn. You learn more from your worst investment than your best investment. So I look at it in a positive Z. So any kind of bad investment I've made, I've learned more than a good investment. So,
Flipping on its head, what's been your best investment then?
Best investment is therapy fertility, purely for the, because, like I said, the babies, crying babies, like, what a magical feeling. And like, we're like financially doing very well, which is a bonus. But like trading babies, can't get a better investment than that.
It's a dream. You got to do well, right? You got to. I think people sometimes forget, especially in businesses that have a social impact, they forget that bills got to be paid too. I like businesses that are very rational about it, going survive. I always say survive to thrive. Survive first and then thrive.
You have to do good
along the way.
Yeah,
happy days. What's your final piece of advice for every founder or aspiring founder listening?
Well, what I would say is go for it. I think so many, when I meet so many entrepreneurs, they're kind of nervous, they're holding back and I can't do that. And they're kind of hemming and hawing, they want the perfect, but there's no perfection. You just got to go for it. And like, go for it when you're younger rather than later. Like, particularly if you have no kids or don't own a house, go for it. You haven't got much to risk then. So you just got to get out there and be bold and go for it.
100%. Philip, where can people learn more about you and about Therapy Group?
On LinkedIn, Philip McGlade on LinkedIn. So you can reach out to me there anytime. So yeah.
And then give us the
different. And then therapy website, therapyclinic.com. We've got optilase.com and therapyfertility.com as well.
Class. Philip, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
No, you're more than welcome. Thank you.